All right, everybody, it is 12:59 and the recording has started. So as we approach the top of the hour, I'm going to get us started today with some housekeeping rules. For today's training, as I mentioned, it is being recorded and will be offered on demand through Cluent for those not able to join us live. Please use the Q&A box to ask questions, make comments, or report any technical problems during at any point of the training. We will be answering questions live throughout the training as this is a round table. So again, feel free to put them in whenever they come to you. For those interested in receiving certificates of completion, they will be available upon the completion of the feedback form. You can find the feedback form on the Cluent training page that brought you here today. Once you complete the form, click the box to certify that you participated. A certificate will be provided to you. So on behalf of the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, I would like to welcome everybody to today's training, ITRC's Environmental Data Management Roundtable. My name is Devin Sechkar. I'm your moderator today from Arlington, Virginia. Today's roundtable is focused on environmental data management best practices. Today's training is sponsored by the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, or the ITRC, and is hosted by the U.S. EPA Cleanup Information Network, also known as CLUIN. The Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council is a program of the Environmental Council of the States. ITRC is a state-led organization composed of members from state agencies, federal government, the private sector, academia, and community stakeholders. ITRC members participate in technical teams which produce tools, resources, and training courses, such as the one you're participating on today. If you would like to be a part of ITRC, please visit our website to learn more information. The full ITRC disclaimer is also available on our website. If you plan to use any ITRC materials, we ask that you review that policy in detail and be sure to credit ITRC accordingly. ITRC is partially funded by the U.S. government. ITRC nor the U.S. government warranty the material nor endorse any specific products. On slide number four, I have the pleasure of introducing our expert trainers today. All of them have served as members of the Environmental Data Management team over the course of the years and have volunteered to also support this training offered today. So at this point, I am going to pass it off to one of our trainers, Brian Pointer from North Carolina. Brian, take it away.
Hey, thank you, Devin. And thank you to all that are listening, whether you'll be listening live right now or in the future via recording. It is worth mentioning that today's roundtable is one of three. If you're listening live, this is the last of the three for the 2024 spring series that we're doing. But you can find these recordings live, or excuse me, recordings of the other two, in addition to some that we did in 2023 on the Cluin website. You can also find other training materials that we have put together, including a 10-minute overview video of our materials and a discussion in sort of a podcast style of traditional ecological knowledge. Please make sure and check those out at the links that you can find either on the slides or in the chat. Next slide, please. So, as with pretty much all ITRC trainings, this training and the discussion that we're going to have today are based on our documents that the Environmental Data Management team worked on in 2021 and 2022, all of which can be found on the ITRC website. I encourage everybody to find, bookmark those links, explore all the detailed material that we put together there. And because today, you know, what we're going to be discussing is really going to be based on those documents, and we're going to be referring to them often, you know, as we go through this discussion. So the documents, you know, when you go and choose to read them, you'll find that they're quite extensive. They cover a very broad array of topics. We have a lot of them listed on the slide in front of you. Today, we're primarily going to be focusing on data management planning and field data collection. Those two sections for the most part, though we will discuss a few others as we go along as well. Next slide. So one concept that we address throughout our documents, and we were going to talk about a little bit today, is the concept of a data lifecycle, data management lifecycle. And The figure that you're seeing here is one of, we have a couple of different models that we use to show the path of a typical environmental data set. But this is one that we're choosing to show today, and it's really particularly relevant to the concept of data management planning. I'm not going to go into too many details into all the processes. We invite you to peruse all the written documents for a deep dive into each one of these components. But suffice to say, next slide, for today's discussion, we're going to be talking mostly about, oops, back one. There we go. For today's discussion, we're mostly going to be talking about these first three components: plan, acquire, and process maintain. And what we're going to be discussing today is ways that you can get started with incorporating best practices laid out in the EDM or environmental data management documents to make your data management workflows better, faster, and smarter so that you can better deal with the ever-increasing expectations for rapid and accurate answers to data-driven questions. Everybody is having to deal with, we need this now, we need this fast, and we need it accurate and correct. And so what we intended to do writing all of these documents, but in particular some of the stuff in this data planning section, is really helping folks to understand some best practices to getting you to that place. Next slide. So speaking of questions, we really want to hear from you. Please, if you haven't already, familiarize yourself with the Q&A pod. Go ahead and start typing any questions that you may have now. And as we are speaking, if there's something that that we're highlight that you want a little bit more elaboration on or anything like that, please go ahead and type it in. We found in doing these in the past that these roundtable discussions are made so much better by your participation. So as much as we can get questions from you, the audience, the more that this can become a more dynamic thing, and we really turn this into a discussion, which is what I think is really valuable to a lot of folks. So we definitely use the Q&A pod. We look forward to your questions, and we hope to be able to answer them. So without further ado, we have a few sort of prepared questions, and I'd like to sort of set the stage by presenting sort of a little bit of a scenario. Let's pretend, or maybe you don't have to pretend, that you're an early career environmental scientist and you are presented with a new project that has a very large field data collection component. And this is your first time dealing with a project of this scale and with this much data. You're feeling overwhelmed. How in the world do you get started? Panelist?
Well, hey Brian, one, you should really start with the end in mind. You want to think about what you want the end product to look like and what problem you're trying to solve. You want to consider that data lifecycle that we showed you earlier. We've put together a data management planning tool, which is in section 5 of the data management planning fact sheet, and it provides a good framework to get you started. You start by defining the objectives. Who are the stakeholders? What are your quality needs? And then you move into how you are going to acquire the data, where you're getting it, and how frequently. Where are you storing your data, and how are you maintaining it over time? You need to consider how that data needs to be shared with others, or if it needs to be controlled so that it's not shared with others. All of this should be included in a data management plan.
And if I can jump in, just to mention that this is also a really great opportunity to not just define your needs, but start thinking about your wants, because you want to be able to build in a plan to address those wants in the future. So, knowing that your data management needs and your analysis needs are certainly going to evolve over time, making sure you're incorporating the ability to address those needs in the future without added heartache.
Also, you can think about how you might incorporate older data. If you've got a site that's been active for a long time, how are you going to deal with multiple monitoring wells with the same name? What are the challenges with correcting data that's already in your database versus setting up how you're going to name things in your data management plan so that you don't run into these instances where you've got multiple things with the same name?
So we talked a little bit about how to get started, and I think you guys mentioned a data management plan and thinking about wants and needs. So what else should be included in a data management plan?
I'll chime in here. So the data management plan is going to be unique to each given project or task, but they should always align with your organization's requirements or your values or your beliefs. However, there are some components that will likely be important for every project. The data management planning overview fact sheet covers a lot of that information. In general, you'll want to include details on the data lifecycle that we highlighted earlier. If you're able to attend the data quality roundtable previously, they did discuss the data lifecycle as well as the project lifecycle quite a bit. Your data management plan should include the expected data types, where your data is coming from, formats or source schemas. So if your source schema is different than the schema you'll be storing your data in, that may need to be highlighted in your data management plan. You should also include storage, sharing, or access information, including those like stakeholder roles and responsibilities for all the people that are going to be involved, and any maintenance or reporting needs or requirements. So it's pretty broad, covers a lot of things. You'll want to consider some data types. For example, is it geospatial data that you're gathering, or is it traditional ecological knowledge? Those things have special considerations of their own, and it'd be good to address those considerations in your data management plan. And then another point to consider would be for your field data collection, are you going to use digital field data collection methods or traditional sort of analog pen and paper field data collection?
Yeah, and one point to make, you know, as you're pondering a data management plan, it can be a bit daunting trying to think about, you know, how to plan things. It's difficult to start from a blank slate, but it's okay. There are some templates out there that have been published. NOAA has prepared a template you can download. USGS has a checklist of different sections and subsections that you can that are good to put into a data management plan. They're not necessarily specific to environmental data, but another group, ISTEM, the International Conference of Environmental Data Managers, they have a white paper about data management plans and a kind of a checklist and a downloadable template that includes lots of details specific to environmental data, like your relationships to your QAP or your quality assurance project plans, sampling analysis plans, different other kinds of plans that you might want to either include in a data management plan, or maybe they're separate documents and you want to link to them, right? There's a lot of different things to put into consideration, but you don't have to necessarily start from a blank slate. Definitely would recommend, especially if this is one of your first times doing this, to seek out those templates and things like that. All the stuff that I just mentioned, the NOAA guide, the ISTEM guide, the USGS guide, they're all in the references section, or they're directly linked to those in our documents, particularly in the data management planning section of our document. So go there, check out those templates and guides, and they'd be really helpful.
Another thing to consider is if your organization doesn't have a data governance policy, then you may need to incorporate elements of data governance into your data management plan. So your data management plan tends to be project or task specific. Data governance is more overarching and extends beyond that data lifecycle or beyond any individual project. The data governance principles fact sheet that is in the documents sort of talks about the components that are specific to data governance versus data management plans. So again, if you don't have a governance policy, you might want to highlight those governance issues in your data management plan that you prepare.
Sorry about that, couldn't find my mute button. So who should be involved in the data management planning and governance?
I can chime in on this one. Really, it's super important to make sure you're getting the right team put together early on. This could be your IT department. It could be a data team. It should definitely include your end users, like your field team, who will be responsible for actually collecting the data. And really, it does depend on your organization. But, you know, you want to make sure that you're bringing all of the best technical folks into the same room so that you can align your scope of work, you can identify all of your needs, and make sure that you have an appropriate management system in place. It's worth noting in, section 3 of the data accessibility sharing and storage fact sheet, it outlines several types of data users who you may want to consider getting involved. So this could be your data acquisition manager, systems administrators, so on. Each of those individuals, again, bringing different perspectives into the mix. The other thing you want to keep in mind, we talk about developing a data management plan. This isn't really a static process. You don't create a data management plan and then turn around and walk away and never look at it again. This is a living document. And so you're going to continue to revisit it, and you're going to have evolving needs, and you're going to need to make updates to that plan as your needs evolve.
You also want to start your planning before you submit the proposal to the client, because there are some cost implications for developing how to manage the data. So definitely get the data management into the work plan before it goes out.
Yeah, we talked at the top, Brian, you kind of set us up with this sort of scenario. If you're new, where do you get started? And I think oftentimes these projects start as sort of emergency response. And when you're in an emergency response scenario, you may not have time to prepare a nice, clean data management plan before submitting your scope of work, right? This is one place where it's important to have governance in place for your organization broadly to kind of handle those emergency situations. And we got a question in the chat that a challenge for data managers is to get project managers to sort of invest the time to make these plans. And I think an important piece is you should include your project team in developing these data management plans. So it's not just on the data manager to make the plan. The project managers should be involved. The field staff can be involved, and they can all inform what should be included in the data management plan. The data management plan helps guide how your data is going to be used after it's collected. And that's driven by the project team. How are they going to use the data? So it helps to sort of involve all of the stakeholders in developing the data management plan right alongside the development of your scope. And like I said, having a governance at your organization level can help sort of speed the process. And for example, one thing that a lot of organizations struggle with is that decision around, are you going to use digital versus paper field data collection? And so thinking through that ahead of time as part of your data management plan or your governance can be really helpful.
Thank you, trainers. And thank you, Megan, for a wonderful segue to our next question, which is, are there gains from a digital field data collection versus a traditional analog field data collection?
I can carry this one too. That there are instances where digital collection is faster. So things like taking photographs and putting the captions or metadata onto those photographs as you collect them. Digital forms can automate data collection. We can auto-populate similar information like user IDs or dates and times or weather across lots of different forms so that you don't have to write that down repeatedly. Or if the form is really short, it can be faster using a digital method. Digital field data collection can also eliminate the need to transcribe data after the fieldwork is completed. That can really streamline data workflow for faster data turnaround. But where a digital form is long, it requires lots of custom information or long format notes that can't be turned into valid values or standard sort of answers. In those instances, it may be slower. Or one example is if you have error checking or other QC built into the form, it can require a user to sort of troubleshoot or edit a form before submitting. And sometimes that can take more time in the field.
Right. And when doing this, it's kind of this balance between, or that's something you have to consider, where do you want your transcription time to happen, right? If you somehow you've got to transcribe this data to get into your database, do you want it to happen in the field or in the office? And a lot of times things you can do is to, you know, if you have, even where you have a paper form, even where it's an analog, you know, forms with valid values that you can circle in the field can sometimes really alleviate a lot of the headaches that can come from having to post-process some data in the office when you're having to deal with things like ambiguity. So it really is just this balancing act, and you have to take many things into consideration. And again, as we've kind of trying to hint at with a lot of these things, it's important to have a plan of action before you get started. Having to deal with this after the crews are already in the field is a more difficult time to have to consider these things.
Yeah, there are other instances where handwriting field data is faster. Boring logs or recording lithology is an example that I use a lot. If a driller is on site and they're on a footage rate contract and they're going to be just burying a geologist with cores to log, it may be worth pushing the data entry and the QC to an office setting instead of in the field to maintain that production rate. But like logging bird sightings in a helicopter, it may be worth pushing data entry to the field to quickly record several automated items all at once, like the date and time and a position, a GPS position, in addition to that single sort of bird type valid value. And then back to the sort of emergency response scenario, you may not have time to build a custom digital form if you're trying to get out to an emergency response. So paper forms make more sense. And then this is another point where if you plan in advance, you may have time to develop standardized digital forms. And then that emergency response can use those standardized forms. The field data collection process development considerations document within our documents that we prepared goes over lots of different examples for these types of options for both analog and digital field forms and how to develop them. And then the last thing I'll say is it's helpful to have field staff practice using the forms in advance of using them in the field, because there does tend to be sort of a learning curve around using those digital field forms, and they can feel slower to the field staff in the field the first time they use them, but with practice, they can get more efficient.
Yeah, you kind of can't stress that enough about, you know, because everything is so situational. But typically, you know, when you think about the things you might be doing for some sort of an emergency response or things that may come up that are unexpected, you know, some of the best planning comes from just trying to figure out how to do your everyday work in a way that would be very efficient for an emergency situation. We do this in North Carolina. You know, we get hurricanes. They come with some regularity, knocking on wood that they won't come this year or anytime soon. But you know, at some point we're going to get hit with another one, and we have to do response on that. And as much as we can streamline our processes for all the sunny days and the sunny months, we're ready for the stormy ones. So it's a very good point to make.
All right. Thank you, trainers. So we have a question from our Q&A pod that asks, for NGOs who leverage free web-based data collection and storage infrastructure, how do we consider that in our data governance plan? How do we also prepare ourselves for server issues on these platforms and plan long term if these companies go out of business?
In a jump here in here first, this is a really great question, and I can completely appreciate why going with a free web-based data collection solution would be really attractive. So a couple of things I just want to touch on. First, when you take advantage of a free application like this, you recognize that you may be just offsetting a time where you may need to put some financial backing to migrating data to a more permanent system. And as you mentioned in here, how do you prepare yourself for server issues and for long-term plans if those companies go out of business, which is certainly possible? I think the most important things to do, again, going back to who to get involved when you're developing data management plans and really larger data governance discussions, talk to your IT folks. They probably already have some language or an approach to dealing with third-party solutions. I would say one of the first questions I would be asking that provider is how I can get backups of my data so that if they went out of business or if their server went down, that it wouldn't equal total data loss. And really, again, have that plan in place. You know, identify, is this a holdover solution for us so that we're not waiting to start collecting data digitally? And we're coming up with a plan that's going to incorporate this data in the future. I think that's probably the most realistic discussion, even if you're not thinking about it in the immediate, that's what's going to end up happening. So either that or your freeware will become at cost license. A lot of the times they do that to get you hooked and then they want to start charging you for licensing. So yeah, just a couple of thoughts there, but really great question.
All right. Thank you, Kristen. When a digital field data collection is the right answer for your project, how do I teach people who are tech resistant to adopting the digital field data collection approach?
I can jump in on this one as well. Technology resistance comes from a lot of different places. Some of them are fears, frustrations, maybe just habit change. And typically, you know, at least the folks that I've dealt with who are really resistant, it comes from bad experience from in the past, whether it's issues with the device itself, maybe it was crashing, sun glare, battery life, or interrupting their normal workflow. You know, they're used to a certain order of operations. Introducing a digital collection method changes that for them and becomes uncomfortable. Really, I think the important thing is, again, bringing all of those people into the room during the planning stage so that you can understand what their pinch points are, understand for the folks who are resistant are the ones you actually want in the room first, because if you can get them on board, all of your early adopters, they're going to be excited. So this is really finding out who your toughest critics are going to be and starting to build with them in mind. Make sure that they know that their concerns are valid and that you understand them. They are the folks who do have to use this at the end of the day. Also, don't forget to remind them of the benefits. So a lot of folks focus on all the bad, make sure that they remember the good. They're not going to have to do that post-field data transcription and, you know, why that digital data collection solution is going to be valuable to the overall project using real-world examples. And it doesn't even have to be work-related. We all like knowing our vacation balances at any time because of the way that we fill out our timesheets, or we like having our bank account balances available to us at a moment's notice. It's really because of how that data is being entered. One of the other things that's worth noting is A good training program is critical, especially for your resistant users. Sometimes those folks are just uncomfortable with technology. So making sure that they have an opportunity to get comfortable with the solution before throwing them into the field is a huge help. There's a training checklist that was included as part of our overall work products. You can use that to help with development of your training program. And I think that there's also some really good information, again, reiterating who to include in your digital data tool creation.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just to foot stomp some of these points that Kristen made, you know, it is so, so, so important to communicate and to bring in your, particularly your field staff, the people who are actually going to be using the form, and having them in the conversation at the beginning. I think, you know, this is a good time to maybe share some war stories or some other anecdotes of maybe where things have maybe not gone as well as planned. I mean, there's a fairly recent one that I know that at least one of the panelists here knows about, where, you know, we had a project manager who was kind of resistant about us talking with his field crews. I'm not 100% sure exactly why. But, you know, we ended up getting some extremely important field feedback from the field crews. But it came at a time when it was a little bit too late. You know, we'd already sort of developed a lot of plans and things like that, where we wanted to go based on some assumptions from this project manager. But once we talked to the field crews, we got a little bit of a different story. And we ended up having to kind of, throw away some of the plans that we were making and take a different direction, which was very disappointing. So it's just extremely important to really speak to the folks who are going to be using the tool, because they have such important feedback and can really drive a successful field data collection operation.
Yeah, I'll also add a lot of the work that we do in data management is very agile, and we sort of strive for continuous improvement. The technologies are constantly changing, and we do try to stay on top of that. So I think it's important to have touch points and always check in with those field staff after you launch a digital field form, get their feedback on it, and get the feedback on their experiences. We at my company, we use Apple products, and we got a lot of feedback early on that in really hot or really cold environments, those devices, the battery life is not great. The screens go dark. And so we had to kind of remind field staff that, okay, if you're going to be working out in really hot conditions, make sure that you can put an ice pack from your cooler, put an ice pack on your device to cool the battery down. Or if you're working in really cold conditions, put the device in your car and let it warm up to kind of protect those devices from those extreme temperatures. And sometimes the environment warrants looking at a different device. So for some of our projects, we went with a different device that had a removable battery. Battery life can be an issue sometimes, especially if you're constantly connected to cellular service and your device is constantly looking for that cellular signal, it can drain the battery. So we got devices that had removable batteries, and we sent them with spares so that they could swap them out as they needed to. Another option we looked at was, instead of being connected to cellular service and always having that connectivity, can you use the device in sort of an offline mode and fill out your forms? And then at the end of the day, you can connect to cellular service or connect to a Wi-Fi and then do a single upload of your data instead of doing incremental uploads throughout the day. Those things can save on battery life. So all of that, all of those troubleshooting and solutions and things like that, you may not be able to plan for those issues. So it's important to get the feedback from your field teams after they've tried it out in the field, because their experience in the field is going to be wildly different than your experience developing the form in your office.
One thing that we're finding is we jumped in trying to go digital on too complex of a form to begin with. And we got much, much resistance on that. And, you know, it's just very complicated, and they didn't want to, you know, like Megan was saying with the boring logs, you know, it's too much to enter in any given time. You know, I can't keep up with what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm focusing on the device, not on my job. And so we backed up and started over and started doing more simple things like photo logs, because those, you know, like Megan said, you know, it's, you know, it's a location, it's a photograph, and it's a description. And we find that now that people are used to doing that, they're asking for, okay, well, let's get a little more complex. You know, give me the next form. This is the next one that we want to do, because it's a little bit more complex, but it's not going to be overwhelming. So you might want to think about starting simple and then working your way gradually more complex.
And just taking back to tech resistance with device, this can go to, you know, even further away from just using a device to using any technology. I, early on in the attempts to go with mobile data collection tools, encountered someone who had never used a phone with a touchscreen. They were still using their flip phones, and they were diehard. Absolutely not. So handing them a tablet was mind-blowing. Take away every other part of what we were trying to do. That person needed to learn how to use a tablet and how to be comfortable navigating the technology itself and the operating system. And I know there's a lot of folks who are like staunch iOS users and others who are staunch, you know, Android users. And when you switch that operating system on them, it can be mind-blowing. So for that individual, before we even went into anything with regards to the forms itself, I sent him home with this device and said, take it home for a month. And I don't care what you do with it. Check your email, play Angry Birds, like whatever it is that you needed to do to just be comfortable having that in your hands, navigating it, and then we'll move into the, you know, what we're really trying to accomplish. But I will say that it was very successful. That individual was able to utilize the tablet. They were able to go out in the field and were successful. I believe we were doing a water levels form at the time, but yeah, keep in mind where everybody is with regards to just technology comfort in general, because, you know, a lot of resistance, again, kind of comes from, you know, the unfamiliar.
Yeah, we have a good question in the chat about, you know, the organization giving some pushback on not having a paper trail of documentation, which is a really good point. Sometimes that's a requirement, depending on where you work. It could be a requirement for if whatever you're doing is going to be involved in litigation. If you are working for a state agency like I do, you've got to have, there's the move to digital is slower than maybe you would hope. And so, you know, there is the document retention requirements, et cetera, et cetera. So that comes to, you know, if you are going trying to go with an all digital solution, do you have a way to be able to take your form and export it to a PDF, for instance, and have that be, you know, sent somewhere to a FTP server or something of the like, right, to be able to get it off your device. And that kind of brings up another point that I wanted to bring up too, which I think a lot of folks, you might get some pushback from, and it's just important in general, is to have backups or ways to be able to back up your data, because the last thing you want is for all your data to be for the day, very important data, to be put on a phone and somebody gets a little butterfingers on the boat and drops it in the drink and it's gone. Does your field data collection application have the ability to be able to, you know, if you're connected to cellular, can it constantly sort of push that data up? Is that a possibility? Is it, you know, again, taking all the other things into consideration, like what Megan mentioned, you know, is that going to drain your battery by doing that if you're in a very remote place? Or, you know, even just, you know, we've talked about it a little bit, but maintaining some sort of a, you know, paper-based solution is still a very viable option. We have a lot of information in our field data collection section of our documents where we talk sort of in detail about, you know, how to design a paper form that can, in many ways, be almost as efficient as a field data collection, you know, a digital data collection form, if, you know, done appropriately. And if you've got all the kind of, you know, anyway, we discuss all the different permutations of doing that. So I highly recommend that you have at least some of that in place. Maybe you just have a backup field notes that you create to just get the basics alongside your thing. You know, it's really just up to how important is that data, how likely is data loss, things like that. A lot of things to take into consideration, but always have a backup plan in place.
All right. Thank you, trainers. So our next question is, so now that I have my forms and my field staff is out collecting the data, where or how does this data go from here?
Well, I can start us off on that one. Movement of data from one place to another is called data exchange. And you really should start thinking about in the planning phase, like we talked earlier, how you need to consider when you're planning where your data is going to be stored and how it's going to be shared. And that's going to help you determine how your data will move from place to place. Our best practices documents include a whole section on data exchange. The data exchange documents touch on the use of valid values, which is basically your dictionary of terms so that you're calling things consistently across your data sets. And those valid values can be built into your form, your field forms. And electronic data deliverables, or EDDs, are how data is typically moved from place to place. In our example scenario where you've got digital field forms, those digital field forms can be transformed into an EDD and then pushed automatically up into your database. If, however, you're using paper forms, you're going to need to type up that data into an electronic format that can then be loaded into the database.
Yeah, I think the most important thing here is that you need to have a plan in place. You need to think ahead, ahead of time, how the data will need to be moved to gain efficiencies, right? If you plan ahead, you can be more efficient with how you're exchanging your data. And I'll just add here that the data exchange, there was a data exchange roundtable last week, and they talked about this topic. And so we would encourage everybody to go review that recording if you were not able to attend that other roundtable.
Yeah, and one other thing to mention too, you know, when it comes to migrating this data into your system, you know, this scenario sort of already assumes that you have a data management system in place, right? You have some sort of a database or something like that, some system that you're trying to get data into. If you don't, or if, you know, interested in this topic a little bit more, we do have a white paper in the documents discussing data management systems, some of the considerations that you might want to take into account if you're adopting a new data management system or trying to upgrade an existing one. Definitely recommend you check that out if that's something that you that you're interested in.
All right, thank you, trainers. So our next question asks, what are some of the outcomes that can result from poor planning?
Oh, this is a good one. What is the old adage, right? You know, if you fail to plan, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail, right? So it's just important to make sure that you have some sort of a plan in place. I mean, what could happen? I mean, your solution, it can be a big problem for your entire organization. Anything that you don't plan for can create headaches down the line. For example, you know, there's even a question in the chat about, you know, building your own platform, different things like that. She asks, let's see, is it better to give the agency? So if you were trying to, you know, send things out to a governing agency, should you give that agency restricted access to the portal, or should data just be sent in a static document, right? Thinking about those sorts of things, it's very important to consider data security. We have a data governance checklist in our fact sheet. It's in section 2 of the data governance section. And then even in section 6 of the fact sheet that we have specifically about data security. Highly suggest you go and check those out. Just because there are some important considerations to take into account when it comes to data security. You don't want to have your data to be breached, to be changed somewhat or anything like that. You do want to definitely, before you give other folks access to things, you want to definitely take that into consideration. You know, sort of worst case scenarios, you might have a lawsuit if something like this might happen. But, you know, in other worst case scenarios, particularly if you're working for an NGO or state organization where something like this happens, you know, bad data, poor planning, poor data quality can result in you know, in enforcement actions that should be happening, not happening. Enforcement actions that shouldn't happen to happen, right? There's a number of different things that can happen. I think most of us get into this sort of realm. We're in the environmental field because we care about the environment. We care about protecting the public. Many of us have a mission to do that because we work for a state agency. And so it's just extremely important that we take care that we're taking all steps that we can to ensure data quality, data completeness, and all those things. And planning is a big, big part of it.
Yeah, thinking through the items that are outlined in the data management planning fact sheets will set you up for success. Even though you may not have the answers to everything, you'll at least have thought through the idea, and you can understand potential pitfalls if you don't have that plan in place. Disaster recovery is one of those things. And if you're doing digital field data collection, like we talked about earlier, you know, having backup, having a plan for backing up your digital field data collection is one of those components. And thinking through those and planning for those eventualities is going to set you up for success.
Yeah. I think I thought I had some more other things to add, but look, there's just a lot of tools that are included in the guidance. You know, you really got to apply them to your specific situation. Definitely make sure you check out the guidance. There's just so much there. There's so much with regards to planning, so many checklists. Apply them to your specific situation. And if anybody else, you know, I guess it's important to sort of put the plug in again. We've had some great questions and we've been able to answer a lot of those. But if anything that we've talked about so far has really got some juices flowing, please go ahead and get those questions typed into the chat. And we'll start addressing them here pretty soon.
All right. Thank you, trainers. So looking to some other questions that we have for our trainers. So when you have a digital equipment failure or a potential for data loss, do you have any recommendations for how to address this?
Repeat that question to me one more time just so I can wrap my head around it.
Yes, and I'll phrase it a little differently. So do you have any recommendations for addressing digital equipment failure and the potential for data loss?
Megan, I saw you came off of mute before I did. So if you want to start and I can jump in after is fine.
Yeah, this is tricky. And this is something that I think we have to acknowledge the elephant in the room, that if you're doing digital field data collection, there is a possibility that, you know, you're going to set your tablet down on the ground and someone's going to run over it with their truck before you've had an opportunity to upload that data. I think that's everyone's fear with digital field data collection. So I think it's important to think through those eventualities, to communicate and train your users and how to take care of their device, to upload your data frequently, to take backups of things. If you can have a printer on site, take PDFs of your data and print it periodically throughout the day, or send it to someone. Even if you're not going to upload it to the database, you can send your data draft to someone in the office who can review it, and then they have that backup. I think the important part is to to plan, right? That's what we keep harping on throughout this whole discussion, is the planning for those eventualities. And like one of the things that we did with our organization, we have our iPads, our digital field data collection devices, and they have a protective cover on them. And we always talk about decontamination procedures for all of our field equipment. That's something that's really important. And the devices have to be decontaminated as well. And we had to remind people that just because it has a protective cover on it, doesn't mean that you can dump your digital field device into your bucket of Alkanox or Liquinox to decontaminate it. You have to take the protective cover off and decontaminate that, not your device. So giving training to your field staff on how to properly handle their equipment is important as well. It's training, it's planning.
And just to add a couple of thoughts, you know, there is actually the same possibility of data loss with field data collection. You take your paper forms out into the field and the wind blows, you didn't have them secured, they fly off into the sunset, or you step on one and it goes into a muddy puddle and you can't see what's written on it anymore. Regardless of the tool you use, there is always a potential for data loss, and you want to have that backup plan. I know with the solution that we use for mobile data collection, you have the ability to, you know, that data can be gone through a syncing event to live sync to the database. But, you know, if you have no connectivity, maybe that is something that you have to do periodically. What are the other options? Can you have maybe a backup, take a picture of that form or a PDF that you've generated onto your phone so that you have it backed up on a separate device? Even when we do have our data syncing to our database, we still have a PDF document that we just click the report button and it stores that document on the device itself, so that if something happened during the syncing to the server, we still had that PDF. If we needed to, we could manually enter that data. So I think it's just reminding yourself data loss is possible and needs to be planned for regardless. I think just adding digital in the name brings up a little bit of extra anxiety.
Yeah, these are wonderfully, they write really nicely in the office, but this is a gel pen. And, you know, not to endorse any product or disendorse any product, but for field work, these are terrible, because what happens when this gets wet? They like to smear and turn into a smeary nothingness. And so I definitely was on a warpath at one point when I was in charge of sort of auditing field staff, as I saw these, they went in the bin because they are awful when it comes to field work. They're great for writing. Don't get me wrong. I love them. They feel great, but not in the field.
Right. Thank you, trainers. So our next question, do you have any tips or lessons learned for designing an ArcGIS Pro or online geo database and using field maps for digital field data collection that interprets with a RDBMS, for example, MySQL, apologies if that is in a wrong way to say that. I'm also curious if you have any opinions about storing databases on an organization's on-premise server versus cloud data storage when it comes to working with Microsoft Power BI platform and or ArcGIS Online. It's a very big question, so I'm happy to repeat it if necessary.
I think we can speak a little bit to this. So ITRC and inner documents, et cetera, we don't endorse any particular products at all. So we're not going to, you know, go and say, use this particular product, Microsoft versus Esri versus something else versus whatever. However, I think, you know, some of the points that you make It is important to understand the features of each particular sort of product that you may have at your disposal and how they play nicely with others, right? It's very important to do that. There are definitely considerations to be made. Sometimes, in particular, if you're using something where it can be very easy to spin up a form because the process of creating a form template or something like that is actually very easy. But you may have a trade-off where it may be more difficult to use a different kind of form, maybe one that's designed by your environmental data management system. But the difficulty in creating the form is overcome by the fact that it's going directly into your environmental data management system. There are a number of different things to take into account, without sort of bringing products into play. That's kind of what we can say there. In terms of on-premise versus cloud data storage, that's a question really probably for your IT department or something like that. There's probably IT policies that will drive the answer to that question more than anything else. There are pros and cons to that. It can be very nice to have other people manage things and have things put into the cloud. There's great benefits to that. There are also benefits to having things on-premise. It is really just a toss-up, but ultimately it's probably up to your IT department and not something that we can really give a big shout out to in the context of this roundtable. Great question, though. Thank you for answering or asking it.
All right. Thank you, trainers. Our next question, what kind of contingencies have you found useful to plan for? Not just equipment failure and extra days in the field, but also things like unanticipated data uses or analyses.
I'll jump on this one. This is a great question. And the data quality roundtable a few weeks back talked about that second point, unanticipated uses of your data. And so like data quality is what they talked about. It's really important to consider your data quality because there may be unanticipated uses of your data. And at the very beginning of this roundtable, Kelly, I think you said when you start out, you want to start with the end in mind. So what are the uses of your data? And you can kind of think through what maybe the unintended uses of your data may be. Is the data going to end up in the public domain? Is it going to be part of an EPA database? Somebody may take that data and use it for some other purpose that you didn't intend when you collected the data. And when you're thinking through those unintended uses of your data, you can kind of maybe collect more data or more metadata than you normally would to accommodate those unintended uses. So you want to right size how much data you're going to collect, and you can plan for that. Something else that I like to point out is growing more and more, I think, especially in this age of AI and machine learning and web scraping and things like that, is data safety and security. Plan for your data access, data sharing. What are you going to do if you have a data breach? And how are you going to handle access to your data? I think there was a question earlier around, giving agency access to data via portal, or do you just give them, paper access? So thinking through the security of your data, I think, is more and more important these days and something that should be considered when you're planning.
All right, thank you, Megan. Our next question. For many years, we have been collecting location and well attribute data with a digital field data collection system using AGOL and a customized field maps app. We are planning to implement a proper EDMs to manage our water quality data. Do any of the panelists have perspectives on using field data collection apps that are native to the EDMs versus collecting field data into AGOL and then merging it or linking it to the EDM?
I can take first stab at responding to this question. This is another great question. I have been on both sides of this scenario, and it's really its pros and cons. With regards to having a solution that is native, so your mobile data collection solution and your EDMS are one and the same. One of the values there is quite often a lot, all that mapping work, as it were, is done for you. Your mobile collection solution is pretty much always matching the schema and all of the requirements of your database. However, that can come with its own limitations, depending on how you intended on utilizing and implementing that field data collection tool. You know, you may have a corporate objective or organizational objective of using one platform for everything, and you find that it falls slightly short of, you know, these four or five tasks, whereas the alternate solution of using a different third-party mobile collection solution that's going to meet all of your functional needs in the field, you're then left with the challenge of mapping all of that data into your database. And, you know, one of the things that I think is most challenging in that scenario, it's not just mapping the data into the database that becomes the challenge. It's making sure that your field forms that you're developing in that third-party solution meet the minimum requirements. Maybe that means you're having to incorporate your reference values or collecting additional information that maybe isn't natively required by that other third-party software. So it is a very big decision. I would say, you know, and a lot of these questions I'm seeing are things that would really benefit from a detailed needs assessment, right? And a comparison of tools. And again, that's something that you would want to do at a planning stage before you try and implement any one of these solutions. However, like many of us, our digital technologies, all the softwares have evolved over the years, and you know, we've already gone down a path. There's no time like the present to revisit a needs assessment and see where you are and where you would like to be and start making incremental plans on how to get you there.
Sometimes it's also a matter of, you know, if you're using that third party system, do you have the technology, the knowledge in-house to be able to transform it from that third party software and get it mapped properly into the EDMS? Sometimes that's the rate limiting piece of that.
Yeah, and that makes up a good point, and always a opportunity to shamelessly plug our other roundtables. We just recently had one on data exchange, which is really kind of the core component of this, right? You may have to do some data transformation on that third-party data in order to get it into your system. And so definitely check that out. There's some good tips and tricks for being able to do that. And if you can utilize those kinds of techniques, you know, it may make that third-party option a little bit more, you know, in your pro-con kind of thing, it may tip the balance to that to some extent. So yeah, it's very situational.
All right, thank you, trainers. And attendees, I have put the links to both the data quality and data exchange archive trainings in the chat. But if you want the links, again, just feel free to ask for them in the Q&A pod and I can respond directly to you with those links. Our next question, what kind of control over personal skills do you select for field staff and other roles?
Yeah, I really want to hear from what others have to say on this as well. But I guess, you know, for field staff, I think what would be the main quality you'd want is just being able to be very flexible and agile. By agile, I mean just being able to adapt very quickly, right? The field is a very unpredictable place, right? It's not like the office, and you always have to keep that into consideration when dealing with field staff, and that things can go sideways in odd ways that you could never predict in a heartbeat. And, you know, I'm sure we've all kind of been in a situation where you get a phone call from somebody, field staff, and you're just like, sorry, what happened? Because, you know, things can just go a little weird. So that's the main thing, is just that flexibility. And that also kind of gets to, you know, if they've got flexibility and they're able to adapt to different changing situations, they're also probably going to be okay with new stuff when it comes to field data collection apps and things like that. There may be some initial resistance, but when things go wrong, they're typically the ones that are reminding you that you need to have a backup in place, right? Usually your field staffs are the ones that understand that, you know, things are going to go wrong. And so that's why it's super important to be able to, you know, especially your veteran field staff, listen to them, whatever you're doing. So anyway, I'm very interested to hear what other folks have to say about skills.
I always say for people in the data management space, I like to look for people who are sort of problem solvers. For field staff, I think it's a similar thing to what you're saying. But I like to look for people who are like a dog with a bone. Someone, when you give them a problem, they're going to turn it upside down and around and flip it over and look at it 8 different ways until they can find a solution to that problem. I think that's a key skill to have in the digital space, especially because things are always changing and evolving. The technology is moving at such a fast pace these days. You have to really be aggressive almost in your troubleshooting and learning.
For me, attention to detail is key. You have to be able to look at things and notice the small things, because it's going to be the small things that are going to trip you up.
I also question, you know, whether or not a specific skill versus personality type is valuable. Similar to what Megan was saying, someone who is going to be a problem solver. Being a self-starter, taking the initiative to solve your problem. I don't think that there's anyone, probably even in the audience, who wouldn't find that to be a valuable trait. Detail-oriented is key, especially from the data management side of things. Individual, you know, actually using a software type of skill, that's teachable. It's really the intangibles, the stuff that you can't teach someone, that becomes absolutely critical to having someone successful in any role, you know, whether it's data management or otherwise.
All right. Thank you, trainers. And thank you for that question. Our next question is, for a small NGO company, how many staff should be assigned roles in the data cycle of the organization?
As many as you can bring along, right? As many as you can possibly. For a small NGO company, it might be as many as you can pay. Kind of going back to an earlier question about how can you convince managers to take data management planning seriously, as many as you can convince, right, is really kind of what it gets down to. And as many people who are on board this data management type, you know, subject, and that you can kind of bring on board that this is valuable, right? We go out and we spend, you know, a lot of companies or folks like that will put big budgets toward, you know, sending people out on these adventures and going out on trips and to go to remote places to collect these samples and do all these things and the laboratory costs and all these other things, right? Environmental data collection is expensive. But it's important, if you're going to do that, you have to think about the end in mind. And like, how do you get from that, all that stuff that you spent all this money on, to the reports and the, you know, the analyses and all the things that you need to get done to answer questions and to make that, you know, the reason why you probably went out and collected that data in the first place? And how can you make that more efficient? As many people as you can get on board with that, the better. And that's where all these things that we've been talking about, you know, we're sort of singing on the same tune over and over again, but it's worth repeating. It's a good chorus, you know. Data management planning, thinking about this stuff ahead of time, is so, so important. And it's just, it's the reason why we do this.
We have a mantra that every project is a data project. And so every person is a data person. And so, yeah, along the same lines that what you're saying, Brian, is that everybody should have a piece of this data responsibility.
It was, you stole my thunder, Megan. I was just going to say, everyone, you know, we are all stewards of data at the end of the day. And treating data like a task in the line of things to be done to reach an endpoint is, you know, I won't say that it's an uncommon kind of thought process and approach to data. People think about, oh, we're going to go collect it and then someone's going to do something with it and we're going to submit it. But data is the one, you know, binding piece that flows through the entire life of your project. It's what all of your decisions are made off of. And a lot of the times what hinges how much money and financial obligation gets attached to a project. So, agreed. Everyone has a kind of piece in this pie. And a lot of the time, it's just about bringing awareness and making people feel a sense of ownership over the data itself.
I like that, bringing an awareness to all levels. That's so true. And it starts with, at the very beginning of the process, like we talked about, planning. And if you can touch all the people involved all the way along and get them to understand that they are a piece of this data pipeline, you're doing a good job.
All right, thank you, trainers. So our last question for today is a little bit of a what if scenario. You have some extra budget at the end of your fiscal year and you want to invest in your environmental data management. What is the best place to start?
Well, I'll start with my winning lottery scenario. I'll go really boring first and then move into less boring. But the first thing I would do is look at my licensing and hardware and software needs. What do I need to do to keep on moving? Maybe that's even bringing on more people. If I have money after that, I'm always looking to the future or to our existing processes and asking, what can we do with our current workflow that is going to advance our capabilities or improve something we're already doing? Or what's coming down the pike that we can't support currently because of some sort of limitation? What do we need to do to make that a reality? It's, you know, it's a great problem to have if you have it.
I can go next. Any opportunity for standardization is what I always want to take advantage of. If you have some extra time or extra budget, you can standardize your processes. If you find yourself in that emergency response situation, you're not going to have time to build a nice digital field form that you can deploy to the field. But if you've built a standardized form in advance, then you can kind of pull that out of your toolbox. So having the time to think through all of the scenarios, to build standardized tools, and not just digital field forms, you can set up standardized dashboards, standardized reporting that you can deploy sort of at an enterprise scale across a wide variety of projects is always immensely helpful. So that's what we would take advantage of.
For me, it's taking a look at what's predictable and repeated over and over again to look to automate some of that. You know, if it's the same over and over and over again, how can I make that task run more smoothly and automate it so that we have to touch it fewer times? The more times you touch the data, the more chance there is for errors or something to go wrong with that. So looking for those opportunities to automate.
Yeah, I don't know if this is something, you know, the question is about extra budget. I don't know if this is something that money can buy, but if I'm going to say it anyway, is to buy some time and some breathing space to be able to really sort of focus and think about data governance. Something that is plague me and just, you know, our organization in general is just, you know, we're very go, go, go. We've got a lot of things to do. We're very task oriented. We've got to get a lot of things done. And it's just been, sometimes we definitely get hit by the fact that maybe we don't have as well developed data governance as we wish that we did. And so having that, I think, would be really good. And I think that, you know, even if you have a very well developed data governance, you know, things are changing. Things, you know, the world is changing. Some folks brought up AI and machine learning, and there's a lot of considerations to take into account with that in place. Probably, yeah. I don't think anybody could argue that, you know, spending just a little bit of time on data governance and looking at that and reviewing it, I think, is always just a really good idea. So, because it's just so important about how we handle our things, and it's, again, the importance of planning. Within all this stuff. So, and of course, shameless plug to our documents, make sure and go check those out. We have a whole section on data governance. We have it all written out. It's there for you. It's just, do you have the time to implement it? And that's what I wish I had. So.
All right. Well, those sound like some wonderful wish lists, with some extra budget. So that does conclude our round table for today. I'd like to just say a quick thank you to our attendees for joining us. And I have a few quick logistical wrap-up notes for you, for the attendees of the room. We would love to hear back from you today, so please be sure to fill out the online feedback form. That is also how you will obtain a certificate of completion for today's course. The feedback form is located on the Kluin training page that brought you into the webinar today. If you go to that page and scroll down, there will be a section for the feedback form, and at the end, there's a box to check to certify that you participated. And upon doing so, a certificate will be emailed to you. If you would like any further clarification on any questions or answers provided today, feel free to email us at itrc@itrcweb.org, and we will follow up with our trainers directly. So at this time, I'd just like to say a very big thank you to our expert trainers for not only volunteering on the EDM team, but to be with us here today and to make this roundtable possible and for partaking in such lively discussions and answering all those questions. So I'd just like to say thank you to all of our trainers. And again, thank you to all of our attendees. And we hope to see you at a future ITRC webinar. Thank you all very much.